So glad you're with us on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's a news buzz edition of the program. I'm Ben Stanton, in for Ben Kiefer. Still to come, this half hour of the program, we'll be talking with the Iowa teacher who invented a simple device that keeps classrooms safe in the case of school violence. And later, Iowa cheesemakers are not happy with the FDA's enforcement of a rule that would prevent them from using wooden boards to age cheese. That's still ahead. But first, comedian, author, commentator, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me panelist Paula Poundstone will be returning to Iowa next week on June 21. She'll be at Hoyt Sherman Place in Des Moines for a show as she travels across the U.S. on tour. And Paula Poundstone joins us now. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you on the program, and we're glad that you'll be returning to Iowa. And I wanted to start with talking about your brand of comedy, which many people like to point out the spontaneous nature of your comedy. You interact with the audiences in a way that's unique. And you've compared your stand-up routine to being at a cocktail party and talking with people about things that have happened to you. And as it turns out, you make it funny. So, but I wanted to hear what you think might be some of the risks of that style of comedy.
Oh, you know, I don't think the risks are any greater than, when I first started out doing open mic nights, the premise of an open mic night was that anybody who wanted to could go up for 5 minutes, do 5 minutes of jokes. And so I would memorize my 5 minutes all week long. And the 5 minute was very important because there was a huge line of comics that were waiting to go on, or would be comics anyways, that were waiting to go on. And so people were very touchy about the 5 minutes. If you went over, you could hear them sharpening the knives in the back kind of thing. And so I would memorize my 5 minutes all week long. While I was bussing tables, you could see my lips moving. And then I would go on, and invariably something would strike me. Either I would get nervous and just go blank entirely, or something would sort of strike me on the way onto stage that I would say, and then now I don't know where I am in the 5 minutes anymore. And so this happened in sort of a panicky way many, many, many times, where I sort of said something that wasn't a part of the 5 minute routine, and it really threw me. And I don't remember exactly what day I figured out that was the joyous part of the whole event. But I guess my point is, as many things could go wrong when trying to do something scripted as could go wrong when trying to do something, you know, where one allows oneself more latitude. Sometimes you hit the nail right on the head, and sometimes you just kind of bend it into the wood. It can go bad either time.
Yeah, well, so it sounds like you kind of developed your style in a way, maybe by accident or just letting your personality come through in the show.
And it's funny. I mean, it took a while to sort of find that and figure out that was the good part, and that, which isn't to say that I'm genius every single time I speak, but you could just as easily write a joke that didn't go over very well as say it off the top of your head. And I have a bit of both. I have 35 years of material, so I have no shortage of material. My favorite part of the night is talking to the audience. I do the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? And in this way, little biographies emerge, and I use that from which to set my sails.
Have you ever found yourself doing that and it just didn't work? You just found a dead end and weren't able to get out of it?
Yeah, but not often, I got to say. I mean, for the most part, once you get people talking, they're very interesting. Every now and then, well, not infrequently, I guess, I say, what do you do for a living? And someone says, I'm a software designer. And I just start to glaze over. But, then I generally just say, and what do you do with your free time? because I don't know anything about software designing. But it is a huge industry. And so you do get a lot of people who are involved in it. And then I just have to find a different way to come at it because I don't know what to say about software designing.
That's right. Well, and I should say, you know, this interaction that you do with the audience is, of course, so much of your style as we're talking about. But you also now have become very active on social media, Twitter and Facebook, and you tweet things that are very funny. But that's a very different style of comedy, I would think, when you're tweeting to a faceless audience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Social media is weird. I mean, it just is. When the first time somebody showed me Twitter, I thought it was the stupidest, most egocentric thing I'd ever seen in my life, and I still think that. It's just that I enjoy it very much. I've spent years being alone. I spend a tremendous amount of time alone because of what I do for a living. I travel. I'm in a hotel room by myself. I'm not part of an ensemble. I work alone, and for a long time, I wrote lots and lots of postcards, and I would see something, and because you couldn't elbow the person beside you and tell them about it or discuss it with them because I'm alone, I was forever writing postcards, and a lot of them I wrote in my head. I'd think of what I was going to write on a postcard, and then later I would. And later I would do so. And after a while, I was never quite sure whether I'd actually written the postcard or I used to call it postcards in my head, whether or not I had just thought of it or dashed it off. And Twitter is the perfect solution for that. I don't know that you keep on what's happening in the world so much as you keep up on a swath of people's perception of what's happening in the world.
Right.
It's sort of like watching CNN. It doesn't really tell you what's happening. It tells you what CNN thinks is happening.
Well, an example of a tweet that made me laugh out loud. It's a line that I can picture you saying on stage. She said that there's a woman at the airport with a pug dog. I'm reading from your tweet. There's a woman with a pug dog wearing a T-shirt that says, "Pugs, not drugs. Are there no other choices?"
It did seem limiting, didn't it?
That's right. So,
without that pug dog, she would just be shooting up there in the Southwest Airlines ticket line. It seemed unlikely to me.
That's right. Well, before we go, we're running out of time, but you've been to Iowa several times, and I wonder when you do come through Iowa, are there things, I don't know if you have free time when you're on tour. I don't imagine there's a lot, but have you been able to experience Iowa when you've come through?
No, I don't really get to experience anywhere. I'm usually in time to eat dinner, get a shower, and go to work, and I leave before even the farmers get up. I'm the first flight out everywhere I go, and I'm usually on my way to the airport at 3:30 or 4 in the morning. I am concerned, however, about the wood and the cheese vats. Why is it an issue?
Coming up, we'll be talking about FDA regulations that will be changing how cheese producers use wood to age cheese. You have an opinion on that, Paula Poundstone?
No, I never heard about it. Why do they not want them to use wood?
Well, stay tuned. We'll be talking about that in just a few minutes. But before we go with you, we want to thank you again for being on the program. You'll be, Paula Poundstone, you'll be in Des Moines a week from tomorrow for a show at the Hoyt Sherman Place and Des Moines, and so glad that you could be with us on the program today. Paula Poundstone, thank you.
All right, thanks very much, and good luck working out your cheese wood problem.